Welcome into the Sports Objective, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates. And we obviously like to have great guests on. Bubba, you outdid yourself this time once again.
Yeah, really looking forward to having this guy on. Welcome into the program. Three-time Super Bowl champion, college football Hall of Famer after his career with the UCLA Bruins, as you saw there in the open, Mr. Randy Cross. Randy, we appreciate you joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I mean, it's football season, so it's my time of year.
I certainly want to ask you as far as COVID is concerned, are you worried about we cover our local team, the East Carolina University Pirates, and the first game is hopefully this September 26th, no fans, all the crazy stuff we've dealt with that. The coaching staff, I know they're having a real difficult time, but as far as the pro scene is concerned, how do you feel about that? We haven't really had a guest on to talk about the pro perspective as far as maybe fans, as far as do you think the season will start on time next week?
Yeah, I mean, it sure would appear it's going to. It's going to start for the majority of the places. It'll start without fans, which would be really strange because, as I understand it, they'll be like piping in the music, piping in the sound. You'll hear crowds, you'll hear music, you'll hear everything, which is probably better than – the audio of the play-by-play of the players and what they'll have to say to each other, because that may be a little bit too specific for most people's tastes. But yeah, I think it's going to be fine. We're going to have some outbreaks. We're going to have positive tests, I think, in both the NFL and in major college football. But you know, I believe, at least in my opinion, that we're going to be good.
Randy joining us now is the other co-host, Kyle Barber. How are you, dude?
Good on, Dave. Randy, you know, here at East Carolina, we had to pause workouts and practice because of an outbreak. We had a pretty large outbreak, and it seemed to be the biggest problem wasn't the positive cases; it was the contact tracing and the guys that were in close contact with the guys who tested positive. We ended up having to isolate about 30 players, and majority of them was through contact tracing and never even tested positive. And they had to be isolated for 14 days despite testing negative, and they couldn't test out. Do you think – I mean, I guess you don't know, and I don't know, but that's supposed to be the protocol, 10 days for test positive, 14 days for contact tracing.
Right. Isolation.
Do you think most schools are actually following that contact tracing guideline to the T? Because, you know, I just find it hard to believe that, you know, so many schools have been affected by this and had players, you know, get quarantined, had to stop practice. But, you know, I just wonder how many are truly following the contact tracing guidelines to a T.
Oh, yeah, I not only want to think that's true, I really do think it is true that most teams are being very, I mean, if left to their own designs, I mean, if you left it up to the coaches, I think you had about a 50-50 chance. But I think because of, you know, the universities being so closely involved, and I mean, from the president and those guys through the boot, everybody, you're going to have very, very strict, very, very close rules and everything for pretty much everybody. I know the school that I have the most contact with over the last month has been Navy, and I do all their home games during the football season. And Kenny Amatalolo and those guys, I mean, they have been very, very strict. I mean, their meetings are virtual. Everything they do is virtual except for on the practice field. And they're actually, you know, those padded rolling donuts you see on the field. That's their tackling dummy. They're not doing any actual tackling. And their blocking is all on bags. So they're not doing much face-to-face. I know there's several, you know, 34 of the high schools in America are back to playing high school football. And I've seen a couple of these games and some shots from practice. I know a place like Navy, they're not doing any face-to-face contact. I know it's hard to imagine football that way, but that's the safe way to do it. And I think you're going to have most people err, at least initially, on that safe side. And the contact tracing is crazy. I mean, if they explained it to me, and you can't do group drills because the consequences of doing deep group drills is what you're talking about. You do one of the wrong. I mean, you do D line stunts. Suddenly, you're isolating and quarantining your whole offensive line, your whole defensive line, linebackers that were in the drill. I mean, it can get really, really extensive.
Yeah, I think that's what happened to us. We scrimmaged, did a full scale scrimmage, right. And I think we had students back on campus about that time, and East Carolina's got a reputation as a party school, and I think it was just a perfect storm.
Yeah. Well, we saw that in a lot of places.
Yeah,
you know, you saw it in SEC, you saw it in all those ACC schools, and you mix young athletes, young students, first week or so of school, all the frats are open, all the bars are open, and suddenly those videos started coming out, and you're looking at going, oh, that's not going to end well. And I think it really woke a lot of people up, to be honest with you.
Are you surprised? Are you, one more follow-up to that, Dave. Are you surprised that for week one this weekend and week two, the weekend of the 12th, that there's only been, that I counted, and maybe I'm wrong, but there's only been three games so far have to be postponed or the date changed because of COVID from original schedule. I mean, obviously games have been scheduled since then, but I'm talking about games that have been scheduled that we're going to play on the 5th or the 12th, only three, East Carolina, Marshall, NC State, and Virginia Tech, and Monroe and Troy. It kind of surprises me. I'd be shocked if we got through next weekend without another game having to be delayed.
It's possible. I think, like we said earlier, I mean, I think people have pretty much done the right things, at least initially. Now, how we get through this first one, and 99.9% of them are going to be without crowds. So, you know, what happens after that? And that's the problem. I mean, you see the NBA and the bubble atmosphere they've had and what that's done for them. I think, you know, football in general has got to take a long, hard look if they do get a snapback of adopting that kind of idea.
Randy, I saw an article today. In fact, it was the article pointed out some New York Times list is showing the worst outbreaks in America. That 9 out of the top 10 are college towns, including, wait for it, Greenville, North Carolina, where the team we cover, and we have around 30,000 students. There was 1,317 new infections over the last 2 weeks, which is an infection rate of 4.1 per 1,000. Bubba's the numbers guy, but even I'm smart enough to know that that's pretty crazy. We had, when the students got back about a month ago, they had a party of 400 show up to a party, and one of our friends, Morgan Ayler, said 400. I would imagine that if it was not COVID, it would be 1,000 there, like at a cake party.
Yeah. And we saw that all over the country, and it was a pretty sobering lesson, I think, for a lot of people. Look what happened in North Carolina. Probably the same numbers at some of those parties. And you saw the videos and the pictures, and they promptly had to go to virtual school. So, yeah, I think we've learned our way through this, and hopefully we're on the beginning of the backside.
One of the questions I had, too, as far as pro football, I know obviously with a 53-man roster, I know you have a practice squad, but you have the inside scoop as far as being a former player. I know you didn't have to deal with this, but have you heard anything from the NFL? Will they allow, be more lenient on that instead of 53-man roster? Will they increase the number, or are we still going to go old school 53 and just do the best you can?
Well, I think the one thing you will notice the biggest difference is the NFL in the past, you've had the roster, then you've had the practice squad. And the practice squad could have one or two, you know, experienced players, which is like they've made a team or been around the NFL for a couple of years. But it was predominantly rookie, free agent, those type of guys were on your practice squad. Well, now you can have up to 8 experienced NFL players on your practice squad.
Oh, wow.
So I think that's something you're going to see. It'll become obvious here when all the cuts and everything else are announced. And you'll say, well, I thought they got rid of him. Well, you can, well, in the bad old days, you just said he stashed guys. Well, now you don't have to stash guys, at least for this year.
Randy, with all the changes this year to everything being done like we're doing this right now, I'm a fan of watching in the past. And I guess you're still up there. Are you still doing Inside College Football? And is it going to be done via Zoom this year? Are you guys going to be in studio?
Well, we've done 4 shows already. The preview shows this last.
Oh, dude, I need to catch up.
Day before yesterday, Tuesday night, and it's running all week long, was our first show of the regular season. And it was done kind of virtual. They've sent cameras and lights, and it's not really Zoom. So it's pretty high tech. They hardwired all our houses for Wi-Fi so we could communicate with these cameras and audio equipment. And so it looks really good. But it still isn't the same. You're not in the room. But sometime probably in the next week or two, we may be a long ways away from each other, but I think we'll be in the same studio here pretty quick.
What is the cast of characters now? And I'm out of the loop, we've been really bad the last few years. So when we're really bad, I tend not to want to watch stuff like Inside College Football as much because nobody's picking East Carolina to upset an ACC team. So, but I remember watching it religiously a couple of years back, and it was you and Neuheisel and,
Aaron Taylor, who's doing the game tonight with South Alabama and Southern Miss, and Brian Jones is the fourth.
I love Brian.
Adam Zucker is the host. So
yeah,
we're all back Brian. Together. We've been doing that for about 10 or 11 years.
Yeah, I love Brian Jones, a big personality. Whatever reason, I could not think of his name to save my life. But obviously the back and forth between him and Neuheisel is always good.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. It's kind of unusual. We have 3 guys on one panel on a TV show that can qualify as UCLA Bruins because you don't see that a whole lot on TV because – Neuheisel and I stayed there the whole time, but Brian was 2 years there and then 2 years at Texas.
I think he likes to claim Texas, not UCLA.
Oh, yeah.
Randy, speaking of UCLA, I had a question for you. Being that you're an alum and playing there, how do you feel about Chip Kelly going there to UCLA and Westwood? How do you feel about him running the program?
Let's see. Yeah, I think it's about now. He's about due. he signed a big deal. He's made a lot of money, and I can't begrudge him that. But the record is what the record is, and man, it hasn't been very good. And watching it as an alum has been kind of difficult, especially when you give the fact that they've had some skill players, but their line of scrimmage has been where they've been probably the most deeply affected by this whole thing. And they just really haven't been that good. And that's something that he's done something about. I'm really interested to see, how they do. It was going to be one hell of a test because they were going to play Cincinnati again this year. And they were going to play Oklahoma again this year and go down that list. So they have a whole different lineup in mind when it comes springtime because they're going to have to be playing. God, I don't know who they're going to play besides Big Ten teams if everybody stays out.
Maybe we can bring back some USFL teams, Randy, for the spring.
Hey, you never know. You might see the Southmen again. Maybe a little Oakland Invaders. Yeah, maybe so.
Do you think the Pac-12 will wait until the spring? I know there's some talk of the Big Ten starting up in October or November. Do you think that'll happen? And do you think if the Big Ten does that in October or November, that the Pac-12 will follow suit?
I the stories are the Pac-12, at least they had their announcement today of this cutting edge testing procedure hasn't been around that long that they're going to adopt and it will really help them. The Big Ten has been sort of making noise that they may come back. I'm not sure what it ultimately kind of accomplishes if you come back in like late October or November. Because the bowl games are going to be around the first of the year anyway. The championship's going to be the championship. That game is, I think it's in Miami this year. So that's going to be there. It's, you know, what are you going to do? It really leaves everybody in a tough spot. If you play conference only, you've only got 10 games. So that's literally 10 weeks. Could you make it work? Yeah, maybe you could. But if you want to do it right and you want to do it justice, you better get going and you better get the guys practicing, or there's no telling what kind of product you're going to put on the field. And the safety, you know, you don't want to sacrifice the product and you don't want to sacrifice the safety.
Yeah, and some news that could potentially impact everybody as we roll into late October, early November. The CDC saying yesterday that told states to be prepared to start distributing COVID vaccine at the end of October, which is way sooner than everybody expected.
Yeah. Now you just got the, you know, everything these days has a certain tint of politics to it. And when you do the math of there's 100 million doses of a vaccine available, you know, who gets it? You know, do they go to all the essential people first? That's what I would propose. You know what? Those people did so much for us for months. Those are the first ones. You know, the people that worked in the Home Depots and the grocery stores and the nurses and the doctors, take care of all those people and let them get it first. But for some reason, it'll probably be politicians and billionaires and whatnot. But
and Randy Cross.
You know what? I last time I had a flu shot, I actually got the flu. So I've never been a huge vaccine guy. And if it works, great. I won't be the first one. I know that. I'm going to sit back and watch personally.
Hey, Kyle, a friend of mine and I were talking about a couple hours ago, as a matter of fact, that she said that she doesn't want to be like basically the guinea pig. She's worried if it comes out that soon, how can you say that you've had research and testing and all that? And yes, I'm the first person to say that we want this thing over with. Randy, I know a lot of people think I'm shallow and probably the guys on this podcast, because we had one of the best college baseball teams in the country and one of the best programs, obviously, perennial in East Carolina. And we couldn't play but a handful of games, obviously, because of COVID and everything. And so my heart goes out to all the athletes, like for the March Madness. We could just go on and on and on with all the different things that have happened. However, having said all that, the vaccine coming out in October seems to be way too soon.
Well, you know, I've seen a lot of people discuss that, including our good friend Dr. John Bream. But, what I want to know what the side effects are, because, to get this COVID over with, I can handle having, you know, I won't say what I said on Facebook, but how bad are the side effects going to be? If I'm going to be in the bathroom for a couple of days, I'll go ahead and get the shot. I can handle that.
Yeah. It's something I think we need, you know, as a country in general. I mean, if it comes, it will be a great relief for a lot of people. And if it helps half the people, whatever the percentages are on a normal vaccine, great. Let's get it. Let's get on with our life and see if we can stop wearing masks and stop freaking out every time somebody gets about 2 feet away from you.
Well, if it'll help half the people, then what you, I guess maybe at that point we would start developing what they call herd immunity.
Don't come to Eastern North Carolina where they don't wear a mask. Hey, Bubba, did you have a question?
Yeah, Randy, we've alluded to your professional career on tremendous 76 to 88 with the 49ers. About 75% of those years were under the legendary Bill Walsh. East Carolina had a very successful head coach named Steve Logan from 92 to 2002, who was kind of a Bill Walsh disciple. But mm-hmm. Talk about what it was like to play for Coach Walsh and all that success that you had during those years with the 49ers.
Well, I was actually the last player to play for the Niners that wasn't drafted by Eddie DeBartolo's organization. So I had 3 years of the bad old days. And then a couple of years under Bill where we were like 2-14 and then 6-10. But the other 8 years were pretty special. He was an amazing coach. He was a great friend. He was, you know, all you could ever ask for. It was I had the honor of playing with four guys, five guys, really, six. I had Bill, Ronnie Lott, Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Roger Craig, and Fred Dean. Those six guys, it was actually an unfair advantage. I've got to be honest, got to admit it. Being able to execute his game plan was the way it worked. It really was at times unfair. Then you add on that Joe's running it and Jerry's catching it, and then they got to deal with Ronnie on the defensive side. Bill was amazing all the way across the board. And the one thing that was a little bit unfortunate was I don't know if most football fans really appreciated how great a football person he was. They knew he was a good coach. But what he had done as a front office guy, what his contribution was as a person to the game of football was appreciated much more, I think, after he was gone than while he was still alive.
Randy, as far as the well, we're going to get back to your career, but as far as the current day 49ers, do you think they're going to win a ring?
Yeah, I'm pretty disappointed for them. I hated to see them back in that. My least favorite category in life in general is, you know, you finish second in a group. You know, being the second place team in the NFL, you just represent the other guy, other 30 teams that didn't win. And there's not much to celebrate over that. And I think they're taking that. They've got an unbelievable attitude. They've got some highly competitive individuals led by guys like Jimmy G and Kittle, and, you know, go down that list with Richard Sherman and Mostert. They're really something. I think they're going to win one of the next couple Super Bowls. I hope for their sake, the post Super Bowl hangover doesn't apply to them. It did last time, but it was a whole different kind of team last time.
Randy, you mentioned how you do a lot of Navy games during the year on CBS Sports Network. Monday night, they opened the season against BYU, and I believe that one's an ESPN game, so I don't guess we'll be covering it. Mm-hmm. But
nope.
How weird is that going to be of all places, you know, to not have any fans, to not see the cadets and the I'm using the right term there with cadets. I'm not using the wrong term.
Midshipmen.
The midshipmen, geez.
Cadets are in that place up there in New York, outside of West Point.
But to not see the gentlemen in uniforms in the stands.
Yeah, you won't. You know, it's really too bad. That decision was made. Gosh, today's Thursday, maybe Monday or so. You know, they decided that the student body wouldn't be able to the midshipmen would not be able to be in the stands. And that was a tough one, I think, for the team, because the team was, I think, the staff, everybody associated with, was sort of looking forward to the fact that there wouldn't be fans, but you would have the entire student body would be in the stands. They'd be separated, so it'd spread out over an entire side of the stadium, but there won't be anybody. And it's, like I said, it's there's going to be some creative ways to make it sound like a football game. Right about now, it's kicking off. Now at 8 o'clock, that South Alabama Southern Miss game on CBS Sports Network, because they're going to pipe in music, pipe in crowd, all that, and get it up to 60, 70 decibels. So it makes it look like kind of a loud atmosphere. So I'll expect that Monday night.
I believe that's actually a 9 Eastern kick, Randy.
Is it?
Yeah, and actually in Hattiesburg, they're allowing, I think, 20% attendance. So
nine thousand.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, about 9,000 people will be there, and that'll look somewhat normal, not quite, but at least they'll be.
You mean for the Southern Miss fans, that's all that are going to the games. Is that what you're saying?
So, no, well, the U.S. Men's draw is a little better than that. Don't get me in trouble with my friends at Pittsburgh. Great, that's our second biggest, oddly enough, our second biggest audience outside of the Eastern North Carolina market is the South Mississippi market. not joking. It'll be good to watch some football tonight. You got two games tonight, the Golden Eagles and the Jaguars of South Alabama, and then UAB and Central Arkansas. And Central Arkansas is going to play more games in the month of September in 1 week than East Carolina will the entire month.
Oh, yeah.
Randy, I had a question as far as the college football playoff is concerned. Speaking of college, there are these talking heads, and I know you're not one of them because you're a real jock or you play football. But as far as these talking heads talking about, we should put an asterisk beside whoever wins the national championship, I think is ridiculous. But I wanted to get your thoughts on, because we don't have the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, even though I know you're a UCLA guy, I just think that's silly because there's still going to be 76 teams potentially playing. Hopefully we can get through the college football season.
Well, I think if you look at the top 10 of teams that are currently playing, you know, maybe from the normal list, the only names that are missing are, you know, Ohio State, maybe an SC, maybe in the right year, Michigan, maybe a Penn State. So I don't think it's that diluted. I think you're going to get a very accurate representation. I just think you'll see some unusual stuff. I said on the show last week, I think you're going to see two teams, the 1-2 team in the SEC and the 1-2 team in the ACC. So in my book, it's Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, and Notre Dame. Those are your final four. And that's something you'd never see that in a regular season.
You don't think Oklahoma will have a say in it?
Randy, earlier you briefly referenced Joe Montana. Just talk about the type of leader he was and what it was like to be in the huddle with that guy. And then also just talk about, you spent time both at center and right guard. So just talk about some of the most difficult players to block during those years.
Yeah. I was a center my first 3 years and my last year, and I was a guard the other nine. I was a Pro Bowl alternate at center and a second team All-NFC at center, but all my All-Pros and Pro Bowls and all that rings and whatnot were at guard. But it was same as in college. I did the same thing in college. I played center as a sophomore. I played guard as a junior. And then as a senior, we had a rotating nine-man line. And on the first line, I was the right guard. On the second line, I was a center. So it was pretty unusual. You don't see that. Haven't seen that very often over the course of the last 40, 50 years where you play that many guys on a regular basis up front. But yeah, it's versatility is kind of a double-edged sword though. I'm always referred to as an all-pro center, and I'm, you know, former center Randy Cross. It's gotten to the point where I don't even really correct people, 'cause I guess technically it's not wrong, but you know, I made a series of Miller Lite commercials after I retired. And on that commercial, you know, girl drops her purse. I bend over to pick it up. She points at my butt and says, "Hey, aren't you Randy Cross?" But I did probably 10 different commercials. And while I was doing the first one, I looked at the screen after we had stopped shooting and they were doing some stuff with it. And it said, "Randy Cross, All Pro Center." And I looked at the director who did all those Miller Lite commercials. And I said, "Hey, just for your information, I was never an all-pro center. I was an all-pro guard, but I was never an all-pro center." And he looks at the ad agency person and he looks over at the Miller person, looks at me, and he goes, "Now let me get this straight. But you were all-pro, right?" I said, "Yes." He goes, "You did play center." I said, "Yeah, for 4 years." He goes, "This is Hollywood. Works for me. All pro, center. We'll put them together. It's not a lie." So, and ever since then, I'm a center.
Well, Randy, we look forward to it. When is your first game? Will it be with, I take it, Navy, or are you going to be doing some NFL?
Oh, I'll be doing the NFL. I'll be doing college football. The first game is in a couple of weeks when Navy takes on Temple. at home there. And as you can imagine, it's been the schedule's been a little truncated. There's a little bit of inventory problem in college football, but that's fine. It's a fabulous place to do a game, and I can't wait to get back at it. I work with John Sadak, and she and Stanwyck Burke, she was our sideline reporter, and we have a great time doing those games.
Andy, thank you so much for coming on. Before we let you go, how can people follow you on social media?
Social media, at Randy Cross, FB on Twitter. I think it's rcross51 on Instagram. Default to randycross.com, though. You can find all my links and my podcast and everything else there at randycross.com. Hey, I got one question for you.
Okay.
What's up? What is Jeff Blake doing these days?
That's a very good question. Do you guys know? Is he living in Florida?
Last I heard, he's living in Texas. Living in Texas, I'm not sure what he's doing. We can tell you exactly what David Garrard's doing, but we haven't had Blake on. Unfortunately, he's been a little tough to get hold of. But last I heard, Jeff was living in Texas, and I'm trying to what he's doing. I'm not sure, Bob. Do you have any idea?
Yeah, let's go to our player coordinator, Bubba Rosenbaum.
Yeah, I'm not 100%. I know at some point, Randy, he's done some coaching, some quarterback training, and then he also had a daughter who played volleyball at East Carolina.
Today, that guy threw the prettiest deep ball I have ever seen. I mean, college, pro, anything. He could throw it 60, 65, 70 yards, and he'd throw it so high, he'd drop it right over the top every single time. He was a lot of fun to watch. I covered a lot of his games earlier in my career doing NFL.
Yeah, he threw a beautiful deep ball, and what you're talking about, the elevation and the drop in it. Garrard did the same thing. That was Logan was Garrard's head coach, and Blake's office coordinator, and he loved the quarterback that could do that. And we had two great ones in Jeff Blake and David Garrard.
In that 95 season with the Bengals where Jeff Blake and they had Shaq and Blake up there and with Darnay Scott, Carl Pickens, and he certainly threw plenty of those deep balls to those guys. And for a very short time period, a lot of folks probably don't realize this, I think Jeff Blake was technically the highest paid player in the NFL when he had that tremendous 95 season.
Yeah, you know who the highest paid NFL player is always. Whoever the next quarterback to get a deal is.
That's right.
Currently, it's Patrick Mahomes, but it's going to be somebody else here real quick.
No question about it. Randy, man, appreciate it. We'll have to have you back on. We could talk to you for hours about football. You're awesome. Appreciate all you've done for the game, and love to have you back on the Sports Objective.
Good deal, guys. Thank you. My pleasure. Stay healthy.
Thank you. All right, take care. All right, bye-bye. Randy Cross here, a Hall of Famer. And right now, a Hall of Famer in my mind, one of my favorite people in the media. And I've been listening to him and reading, obviously, his columns for a long, long time. I think the first time I met him, at least with my ears, is the Brian Bailey Show back in the day when I was a brand new broadcaster in 1996. Ladies and gentlemen from the Fayetteville Observer, Sammy Batten, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, guys. I'm just glad to be talking some football for a while after all this madness with COVID and everything. It's just really great that we're now about to start a season finally.
You know, Kyle, Kyle and Bubba and I are very upset, and I want to get your take on this. But you're talking football. We had people say Sammy was probably. Were you guys going to? I had friends and people that listened to the podcast. Are you guys still going to do the podcast because? You don't have anything to talk about. So there's going to be plenty to talk about. We get the three of us together and the people like yourself coming on. We'll have plenty to talk about. But one thing that breaks my heart, and I want to start the show, the interview with you, how was the reaction to having, even though it's probably the correct one, having high school football that could potentially be on my birthday in April?
Yeah, that's going to be pretty strange. And I my heart breaks for the kids, you know, they've worked all summer and since last year to get ready for this season. And I do feel for the High School Athletic Association. They have a tough job, but they kept putting it off and putting it off and pausing. And I think that caused more confusion if they had come out and made a decision right off the bat as to what they were going to do. And then now you're in a situation where a lot of the kids who are seniors, particularly college prospects, are not going to be coming back to play in the spring. You know, Keyshawn Silver out of Rocky Mount, you know, was probably one of the better defensive end prospects in the country, just announced earlier this week that he's not going to come back and play with Rocky Mount in the spring. You look, what happens to a Myers Park if Drake May decides he's not going to come back in the spring? Hunter's Cornelius Huff had 9 FBS guys who had already committed to FBS programs scheduled to play for their team this year. 3 of those guys, including Evan Pryor, their running back who's going to Ohio State, aren't coming back. So all of a sudden, that team looks dramatically different in the spring than what it would have looked this fall. So, it's kind of sad that we're not going to get to see some of these really great players one more time. And for the teams who are going to pay the price for this too, that they're not going to be as good as they might have been.
One of the questions I had, Sammy, was that the joke we've had on this podcast is they said, if we get Sammy Batten on, I said, yeah, we can talk recruiting. They said, yeah, Dave, but the Pirates haven't had anybody inside of North Carolina this year, the Tar Heels thing. So what are we going to do? Like, how are we going to talk to Sammy when we have no recruits inside of North Carolina? But how do you think Mike Houston has done with and the staff to their recruiting class? It's only going to be, as we've heard, 15, a small class, but so far so good.
Yeah, no, I think they've done a nice job. They have gone out of state. They haven't had a lot of activity in state this time around. But if you look at the first 2 classes Mike brought in, very good, very heavily in state, very heavily on both the offensive and defensive lines, which I think that's probably where they needed the most help. And with this class, I mean – yeah, there's no North Carolina kids, but you got a guy like Walter Simmons III out of Florida, who's ranked the 3rd best quarterback out of the state of Florida, which is one of the premier states in the country in producing college prospects. So they've done a good job. You know, Cruz Temple's a kid out of South Carolina that I really like a lot, and just a very aggressive safety, who comes from a football family. So I think they've done a nice job. As you said, they don't have major needs this year because they have done a good job with these last 2 classes. But I do think they've gotten some good out-of-state players. And again, you know, that Virginia, Georgia, South Carolina, and Florida areas have always been important to East Carolina. So it's just a question this year. They're kind of working those areas a little harder than North Carolina.
Sammy, how in the world is this going to work going forward with everybody getting an extra year of eligibility at all these universities? You don't have so many kids on scholarship, and you're always recruiting, bringing kids in. How is that going to work out? I guess in some cases, some of these kids that are seniors that may have another year of eligibility in college are just going to be told, you know, going home or going to play somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be interesting to see how each school handles that. I mean, some schools are under the 85 limit, so – you know, maybe they can sneak a few extras in there. And it's going to be interesting, too, to find out, you know, how do the schools pay for these extra scholarships, you know, for them to hang around that extra year? I got a feeling the NCAA is going to have to expand the 85 limit in some way, whether it's 5, 10 players. You know, I don't know how they're going to do it, but I got to feel like if they're going to make this ruling that these kids can come back and play that extra year, then they've got to expand the rosters in some way. You know, right now I think you can have 105 counting walk-ons. You know, maybe you bump it up to 100, you know, scholarship guys. But they've got to make some kind of change to accommodate that rule. You know, and I'm surprised when they announced that they were doing that, why they didn't come out and state, you know, how they were going to manage that anyway. But they've got to do some kind of, expansion of the rosters to accommodate that, unless they're going to, you know, it doesn't make any difference to allow these kids an extra year if you're going to kick other kids out of the program to accommodate them.
Yeah, one thing I wonder is while they said it for everybody from freshmen to seniors, I wonder if 2 years from now if they'll rescind the rule.
How are you?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think they'll probably have to rule in for a couple of years.
How do you?
And then back off of it.
You made me very happy today when I saw you work your tail off.
Dave, you didn't meet yourself.
Sorry about that.
I thought you had somebody else asking us questions there.
Yeah, it was my son. He worked really hard today, and I had to give my kids a talk yesterday. I'm trying to help them with their schooling, so I apologize for that.
That's
right. As far as wanted to ask you, Sammy, as far as the college game itself, it's going to be really strange. I know Kyle doesn't think that we're going to be allowed in the stadium, but Sammy Batten will get a spot at the table, I would think, on September the 26th. It said limited media, and he's like, no, we're not going to be allowed in there. But seriously, how do you feel about – it's kind of crazy and surreal to think about college football games and not having any fans.
Yeah, it's going to be really strange. In fact, I ran into a little bit of that today. Steve Kirschner, who's the sports information director at North Carolina, sent me a note asking, you know, about my presence at their first game on September 12th against Syracuse. And, you know, my newspaper has now been merged with the USA Today system. So we've gone through a lot of changes right now. And to be honest with you, I didn't know if I'd be attending that game. But at the last minute, my editors said, okay, we want you to go and write a column because it is one of the first games, you know, being played in our area. And, but I had to, you know, get in contact with Steve, you know, the guy who's going to be covering UNC for our USA Today network here in North Carolina is Adam Smith from Burlington. So I'll be kind of floating around to various schools, and with each school having limited, you know, access to even the press because of the COVID, you know, I was wondering if they would be able to accommodate two people from our chain. You know, luckily Steve is going to accommodate me for that first game and probably for the NC State game and the Notre Dame game in Chapel Hill. But I haven't gotten on the phone with Tom McClellan yet. So, but I am glad there's a new press box, so there is more room. Hopefully in the games that I will be able to get to Greenville and join our beat writer there, you know, hopefully Tom will be able to accommodate me. But that is another question. You know, there's going to be a lot of media, you know, that have had access to games in the past, you know, throughout the state, not just in Greenville, but all over the state, from Appalachian State to Greenville, that are probably not going to get that access, at least early on, until – you know, things kind of calm down with the virus.
Yeah, Sammy,
we can do a report in the parking lot.
Yeah. A lot of people will be watching games on TV, and I may be one of them in certain situations. You know, when there's a big game at East Carolina, they may not be able to accommodate two people from my chain. And if not, if I'm writing a column and it's not the ideal situation, but yeah, it may be a situation where I have to write that column watching the game on television, which, you know, I hate to get tainted by the TV commentators, but that may be an option that a lot of people are facing this year as they try to cover these teams.
Yeah, Sammy, I never have gone to the press box one time, the old one or the new one. I have no interest in it. I want to sit out there and be a fan on game day. You know, I pretend to be a member of the media when we do the podcast. That Dave, you know, loves being up there in the press box, so he can have it. If I can't be in the stands, I'd rather be watching it on TV. You know, talk about today. I don't know if you had a chance to see Coach Houston's Zoom press conference after practice. That man is stressed out. He is clearly concerned about trying to get this team ready to play UCF on the 26th. Sounded to me like he had went from initially he wanted to try to play a game on the 19th if we could find an FCS opponent, and I think he more in line with the AD now, and let's wait till the 26th because we just ain't going to be ready. But that's a whole other set of issues. What do you think about, you know, UCF's going to open the season on the 19th at Georgia Tech, and now East Carolina's going to step on the field with a top 25 football team that's already played an ACC opponent. And we haven't even got our feet wet yet, so tough mountain to climb.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that's going to happen to a lot of teams, you know, this season because of the crazy scheduling now. And, you know, NC State was running into that situation also, you know, with their opening game getting switched. Virginia Tech, they were supposed to be playing, you know, on that first week, and now have moved that game back to the 26th. And you know, not only are they dealing with the movement of these schedules and maybe a team having a game ahead of you, you know, but you've had these pauses in practice too, where your preseason practice has been interrupted, you know, for 3, 4, or 5 days at a time. And then you have to start right over again. And then do you have your full complement of players, you know, when you get back to practice after that pause? Because some of those kids may have been exposed to somebody with COVID or may have tested positive. So they have to be out for 14 days. So not only are you having these pauses in the practice, but then you have kids who are in and out of practice. And then you turn around now and you get these schedules, you know, that are being from day to day being in transition. And it really, it's not really fair. It truly isn't. But I guess that's the price we're paying for, you know, having a football season right now under these circumstances.
Sammy, we were on 12-day pause in Greenville. Really, and what messed us up, and for playing that Marshall game on time and the 12-day pause, and now it's the 12-day pause, because of kids that aren't back yet, it wasn't necessarily the positive test. It was the contact tracing of kids that were near kids that did test positive. And now if you were a close contact, you got to go quarantine for 14 days, even if you're tested negative. You can't test out. We had 30 players at one point in quarantine and isolation. I wonder, you know, and I asked Randy Cross about this before you were on. You know, I know East Carolina is following the contact tracing. You got to kind of find a way to testing protocol, because your conference is going to see if you're testing or not. But that contact tracing, I'm kind of wondering if everybody is following the letter of the law like East Carolina is, because I haven't heard of too many other schools that had 30 players quarantined at once.
Well, I think, and again, I was talking with Dave Doran yesterday, and NC State had that same situation early on when their students came back to campus. They had 33 kids in their so-called athletic dorm, and he didn't say if any of them tested positive, but they were either positive or exposed to people who were positive.
Yeah.
So they had to miss 14 days, you know, of whatever they were doing, whether it was practice, whether it was meetings, you know, whatever they were trying to do, you know, they had a similar situation there. And I know UNC, again, early on, you know, had a bunch of guys who were either positive or, you know, in that situation. So it is happening at other schools. And again, NC State had to pause for 10 days. You know, they had a scrimmage and had a schedule break for 2 days. And then last Monday, because of a cluster, not only in the athletic department, but around campus, you know, they got paused for like 8 straight days right in the middle of practice. And again, you know, it's such a strange situation. I don't envy the coaches who have to go out from day to day in practice and try to figure out who is going to be able to be there. You know, and Dave Doran made an interesting comment yesterday about what they're having to do, and I'm sure others are doing the same. How are they kind of dealing with the situation? They are cross-training a lot of players at multiple positions just in case they get into the season and there's another outbreak and they lose 14 players. You know, they're cross-training players. You know, so if they have to move a guy to another position in the middle of the season, at least that guy has some familiarity with that position and they're not just thrown out there on the field, you know, at a different position without any experience.
Yeah, Coach Houston said we were doing the same thing prior to the 12-day pause. And now that we're coming off the 12-day pause, I just think he's trying to get kids back up to speed in their primary positions. But I think a lot of schools are going to be doing that. I think you have to. You want your best athletes on the field, so cross-training guys probably the way to go. Plus, you may end up, you know, you may have a whole position group get out. Yep. So, I mean, obviously, there can be some things you can't do. I mean, you're not going to teach an offensive lineman to be a wide receiver. But yeah, you have definitely some you know, you can have every guy on the O-line and the D-line learning position on the line. You can do some cross running probably with some DBs and some cornerbacks. It's going to be interesting. It could be a situation where, you know, you see a team that's a lot less talented that just has more depth, just more bodies with the playing experience, pull off some upsets this year over teams that are traditionally more talented.
Yeah. I mean, that could be a great equalizer on some weekends. And I also think you're going to see them utilize the freshman rule. Those kids, and they're going to use those kids for all four of those games that they can, you know, in hopes of not having
you can use them every game. You can use them every game. Everybody gets another year of eligibility.
Yeah, you know, so it's, you know, you're going to see a lot of that this year. You're going to see guys in and out of the lineup. I do think it may help, at least initially, you know, now that most of the campuses have sent their students home. So at least you've taken that factor out of, you know, the possibility of, you know, the football players or other athletes, you know, maybe coming in contact more, you know, with the COVID people tested positive or people who've been in contact with it. So I'm hoping that may help a lot of teams avoid what has happened to them so far, where they've had these big groups, you know, who they've had to take it out of action because of it.
Yeah, I heard somebody said the other day that despite, you know, East Carolina going all online, only about 65 or 70% of the students estimated are still in Greenville because we have some of the golf cabins housing. So a lot of the kids are just staying in their apartments and doing their classes online. So I don't know, boys, stay away. Stay far away.
Yeah, I think most of the kids on the football teams who have been affected have been the ones in the dorms.
Yeah.
You know, the kids living off campus, you know, I think for the most part, are have remained pretty safe from this thing. You know, it's the ones that have had to stay in the dorms, which is a good portion of, you know, each team, are the ones that are most susceptible, you know, to it.
Yeah, I would beg all college football players right now to avoid any and all parties and become one woman men for the rest of this year.
Sammy, it's a crazy time that we're living in, but do you, as far as college football is concerned, do you think that there's going to be some kind of rhyme or reason? It's really hard to know with a fluid situation that we have, but do you think it's going to affect the quality of football? I saw was that the Wake Forest transfer that transferred to Georgia's opting out of the season?
Jamie Newman.
Newman. Yeah. I was like, wow. So Georgia looked like that they had, you know, a good quarterback. And they have a great coach, a great tradition. They have a great fans, on and on and on. And all of a sudden, now they don't have a quarterback. I was wondering about, you were talking about the high school level. What about the college level? There's a lot of guys that in the Big Ten, Pac-12, they say, hey, guys, I could, like, be playing in January, and all of a sudden in March, about 6 weeks before the draft, I haven't heard them move the draft back yet from the NFL. But 6 weeks before the draft, all of a sudden I blow my knee out, and you could lose a lot of money. What do you think?
Yeah, no, and if you look at it, you know, certainly Jamie Newman was a huge story the past couple of days, but he's not the only big star that's opt out. I mean, you think Sage Surratt, who was one of the best receivers coming back at Wake Forest and in the country, you know, opted out of his, you know, coming back to play with him. Greg Rousseau is a really great defensive end down in Miami, probably a first-round draft pick. You know, he's opted out. Jalen Twyman, a defensive tackle up at Pitt, you know, and Pitt has one of the best defensive teams in the country coming back, and their defensive line had more sacks than any team in the country last year, and all of a sudden they lose their top defensive lineman. They're still going to be good, but not as good without Jalen Twyman. Caleb Farley is a kid from North Carolina, a great secondary player at Virginia Tech. He's opted out. DJ Ford is a defensive back at Carolina. They've had three or four kids, but DJ is the most prominent one who was opted out this year. So, yeah, there's definitely going to be an impact on the field, you know, because the guys who are either feel it's unsafe for them to be out there for whatever reason, or they feel like it's in their best interest in terms of the NFL draft and their football future not to play. And, you know, so a lot of teams are going to be affected by that. And Georgia, you know, there's a team that's in the national championship picture and will still be. But now they have to turn around and make other plans because the guy they thought who was going to be their quarterback, which arguably is the most important position on the football field, now all of a sudden they got to turn around and make their plans. And I'm sure they've got some quality players, you know, remaining at Georgia to take over a quarterback. But again, when you're making your season plan and Jamie Newman's your guy, it does take some adjustment, even for a team like Georgia.
Yeah, Memphis found out their starting running back is going to opt out, and they got a game to play by to get Arkansas State, and just found that out this week.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I said, we're dealing with a whole strange college football and other sports too. I mean, again, all the football sports are having these issues. You know, we just don't read as much about them as we do about the football.
Sammy, you earlier, just a few minutes ago, you referenced Silver out of Rocky Mount here recently and believe committed to the Tar Heels. So talk about some of the top prospects in this class, maybe ones in the state that may not be committed just yet, and then what you know about the 2022 class.
Well, I can tell you this has been one of the deep – the 2021 class has been one of the deepest and could wind up being the best in terms of numbers to football bowl subdivision signees that we've ever had in North Carolina. You know, when I first started covering this stuff, and this shows my age, but, you know, there were only magazines out there that covered recruiting. They came out a couple of times a year, and I wrote for Super Prep magazine early on. When I got started and kind of covering this stuff. And back then, if we had 40 players out of North Carolina to sign with major college football programs, you know, that was a big deal. Well, now, you know, we're putting out 75 to 80 players a year, and that's an average. And, of course, a lot of that has to do with how big Charlotte has become in producing, you know, major college players. But this 2021 class – I think in 2019, we had 104 players out of our state that signed with FBS programs. Right now, with the 2021 class, there are over 60 guys who have already committed. There are over 125 who have offers from FBS programs. 60% of those guys are of the 60 or so that have committed are staying with in-state schools, which is good. But we're looking at probably surpassing with this 2021 class, the highest number that we've ever had, you know, surpassing that 104 that we had in 2019. You know, again, there's when you look at this 2021 class of state defensive line, there are some really exceptional guys, you know, Silver being one of those, Peyton Page, who was committed to Clemson, out of Greensboro, Dudley is just one of the top defensive tackle prospects in the country. Zaire Patterson is another defensive lineman that's committed to Clemson out of Winston-Salem Prep. Just a really long, lean guy. Kind of reminds me of KJ Henry, who, you know, is playing at Clemson now when he came out of high school out of Winston-Salem. Javari Ritzy out of Kernersville Glen. You know, a really another good defensive end, you know, that he is, you know, committed to UNC also. You know, just a bunch of really great defensive line prospects. You know, in terms of the uncommitted guys, there's still a handful of guys out there. You know, we're waiting on Diego Pounds. There's a big offensive lineman, you know, out of Raleigh. But a lot of people have kind of gotten in on late. He's a big 300-pound guy who really moves around, you know, a lot better than you would expect a guy of that size. You know, he's been one that, you know, a lot of people have gotten on in here lately, you know, and he's probably one of the major guys that's still out there, you know, that people are pursuing. But we've had so many of the top guys who committed early, and I think a lot of that, you know, is because of COVID, you know, and not being able to make a bunch of official visits you know, this summer like they might normally do. They would be on campus for a lot of visits. So I think a lot of guys have gone ahead and jumped out and committed, you know, maybe earlier than they would have, you know, possibly at the end of the summer. They wouldn't have jumped out and accepted their offers in the spring. Brian Nesmith's a tight end out of Charlotte, you know, who's another guy. His father, Jamar, is a former South Carolina player, NFL player. And Bryson's the guy who just started playing football last year after kind of being a basketball guy, you know, for most of his high school career. But such a great athlete. And, again, a lot of people have jumped on him here in his senior year. You know, so that's kind of what we're looking at right now. Again, it's just an incredible group this year. And with the 22 class, you already got guys like Travis Shaw, defensive lineman out of Greensboro. You guys got 30 offers already. Wow. You know, that's going to be another big class in North Carolina. And we're also seeing sophomores, rising sophomores. I spoke to Russell Stone, who, you know, I have to admit, it's a fraternity brother of mine out of Hickory. And Russell's one of the great high school coaches in the state. He has a kid, Rico Walker, who played three games with the varsity this past year. 6'3", about 220. And he's already got offers from South Carolina, North Carolina, and Mississippi State, and has only played three varsity football games. So that shows you a lot of, you know, a lot of programs are going out and offering kids even earlier now, because they don't have this evaluation period that they normally had in the summer, with having kids at their school camps. Kids haven't been able to go to the combines, you know, the Rivals and the 24/7 Sports and the VTO combines all had to get canceled, or most of them this summer, you know. So a lot of that exposure that the 2021, 2022, and 2023 classes particularly would have gotten this summer, they haven't received. And I think that's prompted a lot of programs to go out and offer kids a little early. I was talking to Jason Battle, who's Keyshawn Silver's coach over Rocky Mount, and he made a pretty interesting statement. He said, you know, these college programs are going to be making a lot of mistakes in these next two recruiting classes because they haven't had that massive evaluation in person and otherwise that they would have had with these groups. And, he thinks there's going to be a lot of mistakes, and I guess that's left to be known. I think these college guys will still have plenty of video and conversations with their high school coaches and others, enough to evaluate and make good decisions. But Jason seems to think there's going to be a lot of bad decisions, you know, because of this break in the evaluation process.
Well, I wanted to ask you, we got a couple minutes left, Sammy. But overall, you've had a chance to cover a lot of football at high school and college, and this particular case with East Carolina. What do you think about, if I don't want to say a grade, but how do you feel about Mike Houston and his recruiting in the last couple of years?
Well, I'll tell you, I do some work for Bonesville.net, which is an independent East Carolina site. So every year I rank their classes to sometimes to the dismay of the coaching staff. But the last couple of classes I've given a B+. I mean, I think they've done an excellent job, particularly fulfilling their needs. You know, you look at this last year's class, you know, again, good defensive linemen. You pull out Mason Garcia, who's a top quarterback prospect, or one or two, depending on how you look at it, in the state of South Carolina. Two classes back, with Travion Freshwater, Keziah Everett, just a bunch of really good defensive line prospects who I think you're going to see, you know, emerge. Rick DeBrew was part of that group too, who's already made an impact at East Carolina. You know, so I think he's done a really great job, he and his staff, of recruiting not only in the state of North Carolina, despite the start they've had this year in the state, but working the geographical landscape or footprint that they are trying to go in the Tidewater area. I mean, you look at the last year's class, they worked the Tidewater area really well too, with some really good prospects. So I think they've done a great job. You know, if I had to give them a grade, it'd be a B+ right now. That's kind of what I've graded these last two classes.
Well, hey, that's actually, considering what we've been through, Sammy, take a B plus as far, especially my days, my academic career at East Carolina and high school down, I'll take a B plus anytime. But as far as we were talking about the classes of Coach Houston, I think what it comes down to simply the North Carolina battle. When you have Mack Brown coming back and you've got so many great coaches, you have seven Division I schools with FBS, not making excuses. But another thing is we're not winning at East Carolina. We eventually will under Mike Houston, but don't you think that winning will help the recruiting?
Oh, it always does. And, you know, there's a lot of factors kids look at. One, they love to be on television, which East Carolina is on TV a lot. They want to go to the NFL, which you look at East Carolina's record, putting people in the NFL has been pretty good. But then they want to win. And, you know, so East Carolina's hitting two of those three right now. They just got to get back on that winning track. And, again, I think you'll see a step forward this year. You know, he made a step forward last year. But I think now you're going to start to see the guys that he actually has recruited are more and more of them going to be on the field. And we'll really find out if my B-plus, you know, is realistic. But you talk about recruiting in the state against the seven in-state or other six in-state schools. Well, we are also have Clemson coming into the western part of the state, very active. Scott Satterfield moving from Appalachian State to Louisville. And if you look, he's got two or three kids out of the state out of this 2021 class. So you're seeing more other schools come into our state as well. And, again, I think that's a product of the internet, the great job that a lot of these websites, you know, 24/7 and Rivals and everybody are doing, you know, because, you know, teams in California can find out who the best players in North Carolina are now. When I started doing this, you know, 50 years ago, you know, teams in California weren't in North Carolina recruiting. But now you see Oregon, Stanford, USC are offering kids in the state. And so it is a much better, much tougher battleground than it's ever been before. But again, I do think there's a certain attraction to in-state kids particularly, and kids from the Tidewater and kids from South Carolina to an East Carolina. Because of what the education they can get there, the exposure they can get there, and if start winning again. And again, let's face it, the American Athletic Conference is a really good football league. You know, they're not playing a bunch of pancakes in that league. Every week you got to come out and give it your best shot or else you're going to get beat. So, you know, I think that you'll see East Carolina football come back this year, and I do think you'll see a step forward. And eventually, the thing they need to do, and I think Carolina fans, and I grew up in Goldsboro, so I have a good perspective on this. You know, I grew up in the era of Danny Kempley and the Wild Bunch defense and Leander Green, you know, quarterback. You know, so I think I have a little perspective on East Carolina fans, and I think sometimes they get too excited about beating NC State and UNC, and don't get as excited about winning a conference championship, which I think is what the goal should be right now. Let's don't care about these other teams in the state. Non-conference games are great, and they pay money sometimes, and they bring fans to the stands, but let's win that conference championship. It's been a while since Skip Holtz was there, and we won back-to-back, you know, Conference USA championships. That, to me, is when we know East Carolina football is back and back to stay when they are looking for that AAC title.
Sammy, we appreciate your time, but we have one more for you from one of our loyal viewers and listeners, Johnny Gardner. He says, your thoughts on Michael Allen.
Well, you know, I think that's a great prospect. You know, somebody who could really help, you know, maybe not so much immediately, but, you know, again, a fantastic prospect. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with his future.
Out. And before we let you go, what about where can people read your column? And certainly we hope the next time we have you on, we can be talking college football, and then we'll get you back on the first year to get breakdown. I can't believe I'm saying that, high school football.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at FO underscore Sammy Batten, FayObserver.com. You can read my stuff. But now that we're part of the USA Today network, you can also read my stuff sometimes in the Kinston and New Bern, Jacksonville papers, Gastonia, Asheboro, Asheville, Shelby, Burlington. and even on occasion if it warrants in USA Today now. So we're part of that wide, vast USA Today network right now. So that's kind of expanded my sphere of attention, I guess, there.
And also, Bonesville.net. I don't.
Yeah, Bonesville.net. I can't forget them. They've been, you know, Danny Woodford has been very, very good to me through the years, and it's kept me connected with the East Carolina community, and I've been very grateful for that. And again, growing up in Goldsboro, you know, most of my high school teammates all wound up in East Carolina, and I spent a lot of time in Greenville, probably at places I shouldn't have been when I was still in high school. But I always had a soft place in my heart, for East Carolina and Greenville.
Well, thanks for your time, my friend, and stay safe, stay home, I guess, as much as you can. We're covering the college game, and we'll see you again in a couple months.
Okay, guys, it's been my pleasure. Enjoyed it.
All right, Sammy Batten from the Fayetteville Observer, and appreciate him as always for what he's done for us. And Bubba, we'll about to wrap this thing up, but we got more content coming up, and we'll promote that and then get out of here.
Yeah, actually, later on tonight, Kyle and I will we have plans to join you. First FBS game of the night, or excuse me, season and night, but because we do have two, Southern Miss taking on South Alabama down in Hattiesburg, but UAB is taking on Central Arkansas, and Central Arkansas is playing their, I guess, what, second game here in about 6 days. So definitely we'll check that one out on ESPN3, and Kyle and I will talk about that with the UAB beat writer here in a few hours. So definitely check that out, whether it's then or tomorrow on our archives, excuse me, on Facebook and YouTube Live. And then tomorrow afternoon, we'll be catching up with Brandon Sneed. Brandon's a Greenville resident, and he has a new book out. I've read a little bit of it and really enjoying it so far. Sooner is talking about the rise of Lincoln Riley, being a high school football player in West Texas, walking on at Texas Tech, and then rising quickly through the coaching ranks from his time as, I guess, what, a 27-year-old, something like that, yeah, on Ruffin McNeil's staff as an OC, and getting that call to move on to Oklahoma after the 2014 season. And so really look forward to talking about that book with Brandon. And then after that, we will be joined by Pete Medhurst. And earlier in the Randy Cross interview, when we referenced that Navy BYU matchup on Monday night, and so we'll talk to Pete Medhurst about the middies and that matchup with the Cougars.
That's gonna be great, and look forward to that. Wish I could be with you guys tonight. I gotta get up at 5 a.m. So definitely going to bed here in a little bit. And Bubba, as always, thank you very much for your hard work. Want to thank Randy Cross, a great football player at UCLA and the 49ers. Of course, does a great job as an analyst now, and CBS Sports. He does all the of course, the Navy home games. I want to thank Sammy Batten from the Fayetteville Observer. Appreciate him very, very much. All right, we're going to get out of here. Appreciate all you guys very much, and ladies listening and viewing. You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, and go Pirates. Good night, everybody.